This is the podcast of Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta. Thanks for listening. If you have a moment, would you rate us or review us on whatever system you're using to listen? We would love to reach more listeners, and ratings and reviews help spread the word. Thanks.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future.
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the one and only research library rock and roll radio show. I am Charlie. My absent co-host is Amit.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
And we both work at the Georgia Tech Library. Anthony is on the board.
Hey.
And Fred. Fred stayed. Fred is in the studio with us.
Hey.
For the next hour, we've got music and library talk for you. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Our show today is called Archive the Future, Part 3, Burt Lyons and Exactly.
So far in this Archive the Future series, we've talked with Jefferson Bailey of the Internet Archive about the future of archiving the web, and with Burgess Jules and Ed Summers about documenting the now.
And today, we'll be chatting with a digital archives expert about the magic of preserving modern digital materials exactly as they are. Exactly.
This is going to get weird. Our songs today are about the digital adolescence coming out of the dark ages. And we've also got a little Alan Lomax for you. Thank goodness we've got archivists today who are taking up the mantle of Lomax by preserving born digital material before it is lost. So let's start with a song that looks to the future. This is, I'm going to get the pronunciation wrong, but bear with me, O Tempo Now Para, Time Does Not Stop, by Cazuza, right here on Lost in the Stacks.
Disparo contra o sol, sou forte, sou por acaso. Minha metralhadora cheia de mágoas. Eu sou o cara cansado de correr na direção contrária, sem pódio de chegada ou beijo de namorada. Eu sou mais um cara. Mas se você achar que eu estou derrotado, saiba que ainda estão rolando os dados, porque o tempo não para. Dias sim, dias não, eu vou sobrevivendo sem um arranhão da caridade de quem me detesta. A tua piscina tá cheia de ratos, tuas ideias não correspondem aos fatos. O tempo não para. Eu vejo o futuro repetir o passado. Eu vejo um museu de grandes novidades. O tempo não para. Não para. Não para. Tenho data pra comemorar. Às vezes os meus dias estão de par em par, procurando agulha num palheiro. Nas noites de frio é melhor nem nascer, nas de calor se escolhe é matar ou morrer.
e assim nos tornamos brasileiros. Se chamam de ladrão, de lixa, maconheiro, transformam um país inteiro num puteiro, pois assim se ganha mais dinheiro. Yeah! Ideias não correspondem aos fatos. É, o tempo não para. Eu vejo o futuro, revisto o passado. Eu vejo um homem meu de grandes novidades. Mas o tempo não para. Não para. Não para.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and joining us by phone is Bert Lyons, Senior Consultant at AV Preserve. Bert specializes in the acquisition, management, and preservation of documentary, research, and cultural heritage collections. He also serves as an Associate Lecturer and Honorary Fellow at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Library and Information Studies. Prior to joining AV Preserve, Bert worked at the American Folklife Center, at the Library of Congress, and at the Alan Lomax Archive. He is active nationally and internationally with professional archival organizations such as the International Association of Sound and Audiovisual Archives and the Society of American Archivists. Bert, welcome to the show.
Hey, Wendy, thanks. Glad to be here.
Can you start by telling us what inspired you to pursue a career in archives?
Yeah, luck would have it that I ended up in an archive called the Alan Lomax Archive in New York in 2001, 2002. I was an audio engineer before that. Actually, I had traveled from Memphis to New York with my band at the time, Logia, and we were, you know, like every young band, attempting to make it big in New York, and quickly found that that wasn't going to happen. So I got involved doing temp jobs throughout New York City. Did some sandwich making, some panini making, sold panini machines in Little Italy, worked at Avon, worked at Zabar's, and olive oil samples.
This is sounding like the classic American story.
What's that?
Sorry, I didn't mean. I said this is sounding like the classic American "Make It Big in New York" story.
Yeah, it was, man.
Rags to archives, riches.
I had a friend who was working for the Woody Guthrie Archive, and we had gone to college together. And he had found out about the Alan Lomax Archive. The Woody Guthrie Archive didn't have enough money at the time to support his job, and so they said, "Why don't you go there and talk to Anna Lomax, Alan's daughter?" And see about working for her. So my friend, his name is Nathan Salzberg, he actually did that. And a year later, we showed up in New York with our band trying to make it big and doing our jobs. And then Nathan reached out and said, "Hey, look, you know, we could use someone who can do some audio technician work over here at the Lomax Archive for part-time. Why don't you come over and do it?" At that point, honestly, through all my life of going to school, getting through college, I was teaching kindergarten and first grade in Memphis, doing concert promotion, playing a band. But it wasn't until 2001 and 2002, forget the exact date, that I stepped into the Lomax Archive and understood what an archive really was.
And
I stayed there, and I worked there for 5 years in New York, doing audio transfers of Lomax's recordings, learning about how that works, some of the earlier approaches to audio digitization. You know, in the early 2000s, we were still digitizing and recording everything and saving data CDs of the final digitization output. It was, around 2002, we realized, oh man, we got to get all these digital preservation copies we've created off of these CDs and put them into hard drives.
And just to explain,
we store them on a server. Right? That we realized that on the job around 2002, 2003. But I mean, generally, just to answer your question in a more concise way, I walked into that archive and fell in love with the stories that were there. I realized how much there was to learn about the world from the documentation that this particular gentleman, Alan Lomax, had amassed over his career, working all over the world to record people's songs, their stories, their dances, to try to understand what it was that drove their cultural expression, to document that and to help those people share that information back out to the world. And I think that really moved me, and that really, from that point forward, I realized there was a lot of power in the process of creating and managing and maintaining and providing access to archives.
Mm. So it seems like you have quite a few threads of expertise in your career, working at the Alan Lomax Archive and then at the American Folklore Center, and now for AV Preserve. You know, there's digital preservation, audiovisual archives, and building workflows and tools. How would you sort of describe your manifesto of being an archivist, or what is your mission as an archivist?
That's a good question. I would say can I have two manifestos?
Yes.
Would that be okay?
That is allowed.
All right, good. All right. Manifesto one is that the power of and I really do call myself an archivist. I'm a certified archivist. My master's is in museum studies, but the entire focus was on archival theory and practice. I've really worked in archives more than anything. That's really been where I've found myself. And so I think manifesto one is that the power of what archivists bring to the table at any organization in any conversation is this concept of appraisal and selection of information, right? To help people make decisions about information that is of value to future researchers, to the future public, to future societies, to help people make that decision that I think really is an obstacle for many people. What is it that's important? And I don't mean important with a capital I or important with, you know, I know what's important, because I don't personally know what's important, but I really do know, and all archivists have experience with understanding how to approach that question. And we critique ourselves in that respect. And I think that if I have one main manifesto in archives, it's to continue to serve in a community of people who are trying to be open and reflexive about their actions in a way that helps to define and build a record of human and natural activity that's going to be useful to the future. And that'll be a clear picture of the past. Right, so trying to be as aware as possible how these selection decisions affect the future, and I think that's what I said earlier. I think power is an important part of being an archivist, is recognizing that information matters and that making decisions about preserving information matters, and being thoughtful and careful about it matters. And I think that's something that we can bring to the table. As archivists. I think you look on, so my second manifesto looks at that and then turns it on its head and says, but also I think what's important is efficiency, is that time is money and time matters as well. And the archivist, the profession of being an archivist is but one of many professions in the world. And the activities that we perform are just one of many other activities that have to occur, and some of them in some cases take priority, right? And so being an archivist is also about helping to find efficiency, so that we use the money that archives have to spend on preservation carefully, so that we use that those resources in a way that makes the most out of them, remembers and creates space for all of the other activities that have to take place in this world in a way that's not wasteful. So I think that's another part of being an archivist in today's world, is thinking about efficiency and thinking about how not to be wasteful with our resources, but how to also, looking back at Manifesto 1, how to remember the really important work that we do. Mm-hmm. And then if I could have one more manifesto, number 3, it would be about just how much change the digital environment has brought into our world and how much of opportunity there is for archivists. I think that's another thing that I push in my day-to-day work, which is we have opportunities to embrace the automation of technology, the simplicity of technology, to embrace the power of technology to make both the content in archives more valuable to the public, more visible to the public, to preserve it better, but also to show how we as archivists bring our technological skills into all kinds of professions and can play a role to bring Manifesto One into that world and really help help share the skill set that we have about selection and appraisal. Okay, anyway, those are my manifestos and a very long-winded approach to answering your question.
Perfect. We are speaking with Bert Lyons, Senior Consultant at AV Preserve and possessor of no less than 3 archive manifestos, and we're going to be talking about the tools that he uses to archive the future after a music set.
File the set under BF724.J33.
Thank you.
I'm Afraid They're All Talking About Me by Mickey and Ludella. And before that, Teenage Kicks by The Undertones. Those were songs about digital adolescence and growing pains.
We're talking with Bert Lyons of AV Preserve. And Bert, I just love to know, what is the latest tools that you've been working on? What are the latest features that you've built into Xactly?
Oh, great. That's an awesome question, Wendy. Actually, we've a big problem today in digital archives, in digital technology in general, and information in general, is the fact that there's just so much digital information out there. You could compare the amount of output of a current business today, and you'd see if you printed out every file onto a piece of paper and stacked it up against the pieces of paper that were the outputs of organizations 20, 40, 50 years ago, the stacks are tremendously higher today. So we're just creating a lot more information. So we've got this great new tool called Maybe, right? And so the way Maybe works is, We really hone in on the strength of probability, right? 50% chance yes, 50% chance no. It's like going to the roulette wheel at the casino. So you take Maybe, you give it to your donors, or whoever, or yourself, right? You point it to some files or some directories on your computer that you want to move to the archive. You're done with them. You're ready to store them in the archive. And you create some metadata if you want. Go ahead. Why not? And then you press the transfer button, right? And so what the transfer button does on Maybe is the transfer then decides, with the flip of a coin behind the scenes, whether it's going to send that information to the archive or whether it's just going to delete it and tell you it sent it. You'll never know. The archive will never know. And everybody will be happier. So that's our idea for Maybe. I think we'll have it out in the next month or so, actually.
Oh, man, Bert, Wendy's about to have a heart attack. Please tell me you're kidding.
Wait, why? I mean, this is an important change of perspective that we think archives and archivists and librarians need to really take into account. I mean, are we really ever going to be able to afford to store all this digital information?
Maybe.
Exactly.
That was great.
The troublemaking of archivists has reached a new height. Thank you to Bert for joining the April Fool's joke, and I'm going to flip a coin to see if it should stay in the show file.
We are talking with Bert Lyons of AV Preserve on today's Lost in the Stacks about digital archives, audiovisual materials, and archiving the future. So, Bert, if you could tell us a little bit about the mission of AV Preserve and a little bit also about your role there.
Sure. Yeah, AV Preserve is a company that's been around since 2006. And I'd say the mission of the organization has shifted a little bit since its beginning, right? As its name suggests, it started out as an organization that helps other organizations move through the process of digitization and management of audiovisual materials, right? Working towards preservation and towards access. So originally, from probably 2006 to 2010, that was a big focus of the organization. But naturally, with digitization of audiovisual materials, you end up with quite a stack of digitized files, digital files that you have to then manage, both for long-term preservation. You probably are managing them for access, for day-to-day access, for online access. So all of those questions naturally follow on. So since about 2010 through today, the organization has shifted a little in that our biggest focus is digital preservation. We work with clients and organizations and government and state government, national government, broadcast organizations, corporations, archives, libraries, universities, all over the place, working on questions of digital preservation preparedness, digital preservation strategy, helping organizations select new technology, helping organizations with metadata, development, metadata modeling, even data management needs that they may have, planning for storage, software development. We really work kind of in many capacities with organizations, but mostly if you want to talk about what the mission is, it would be to work in concert with partner organizations around the country with clients to improve their overall performance for digital preservation, for access to digital content, for automation of metadata transformation, metadata management across different parts of their organizational business, and long-term storage of digital content. And then also the previous mission of AV Preserve, we also still do a lot of work around helping people with audiovisual collections also, right? So you need a collection assessment, you have lots of audiovisual physical materials, and you're trying to work through a strategy to identify exactly what you have, to do some cost analysis for how much it would cost to digitize, what the result of that would look like. We help organizations do that all the time as planning, as part of their day-to-day planning purposes.
So Bert, go
ahead.
Well, I was just going to, this may be an opportunity for you to talk a little bit about the tools of AV Preserve. Because I was just thinking, you know, in your first segment, you mentioned working at the Alan Lomax Archive and hearing the stories that those collections told. And I was wondering what you would tell, like, an Alan Lomax that's happening now. You know, of course, Alan Lomax, 60, 70 years ago, someone that's doing that kind of capturing of sound now, what would you tell them? What tools would they need to use to help them make sure that what they're capturing is preserved for the long term?
Sure. So recently we started working with some colleagues at the University of Kentucky. Doug Boyd was our main contact over there at the Louis B. Nunn Center for Oral History at the University of Kentucky. So if you want to make a little bit of an analogy, you know, Alan Lomax did oral history as much as he did recording of music, and Alan was doing oral history recordings in the 1930s, starting with Jelly Roll Morton. So you think about the concept and the process of recording oral histories, and you see that a lot today. I think that's actually a very popular trend that we see in today's academic environment and in today's archives and libraries. So Doug at the University of Kentucky has a very strong oral history program, and Doug has people working for him all over the country who are creating oral histories on digital audio recorders, right? Out in the field, taking photographs, creating documentation packages for specific people's stories, and then delivering those documentation packages to Doug over at the University of Kentucky. And so for many years, the way that happens is they record it on their digital audio recorder, and they transfer that to their computer. They take some photos with camera, they transfer those to their computer, they write up a little transcript, they put it all on a CD, on a flash drive, and they mail it in the mail to Doug, and then Doug receives it via the U.S. Postal Service, and unpacks it, puts a little physical object, attaches it to his computer, and grabs the data off of it, right? And so that's one way to do it. It's slow in today's technology. In today's modern day times, we can do all of this same kind of stuff over the network, right? We can connect to each other and send emails. While we don't necessarily have to send things in the mail unless we really want to. It's costly. It's also wasteful in terms of plastic and resources like this. So Doug was interested in a tool that would help him work with people, help him get digital content into his archive from people who are doing recordings like Mr. Alan Lomax out in the field. So if you've got Alan Lomax in Alabama recording an oral history with Bessie Jones, or she would be in Georgia, then what Doug would do is say, here, Alan, take this tool, put it on your computer, and when you get all of your files onto your computer, use this tool to send those files to me instead of writing them to a CD and mailing them to me. So it really kind of tries to take the physicality, some of the physicality out of the process, which also takes some of the potential error out of the process. So it exactly helps a field recorder or an average person who doesn't really need to know or want to know the esoteric nature of certain library and archive practices, helps them not have to worry about it, but to actually help the archivist participate in those practices. So all they have to do is open up an application on their computer, which they're used to doing, give something a title, point to some files and directories, and then press go, and it'll send the files over to Doug per Doug's request, right? So that's kind of a tool set that at AV Preserve we like to really get involved with building, because it's something that we work with a partner like University of Kentucky. We build a tool that we can then give away to the archives community for free, right? So the University of Kentucky really has put forth the funding for the tool, makes it happen, helps design the tool. AV Preserve staff, myself, mostly on this project, you know, are very aware of the processes involved and the goals, and so we work together with them to build something that really functions, and then make it open source, make it something that people can take and continue to improve over time. And then we, as a company, AV Preserve, part of our mission is also to make these tools and make them available and share them widely with the different communities that we work in.
That's great. Well, we'll dig more into the themes in the next segment. You are listening to Lost in the Stacks, and we'll talk more with Burt Lyons on the left side of the hour.
This is Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta. Today's show is called Archive the Future, Part 3, Burt Lyons, and Exactly, Not Maybe. In his editorial for the July 2014 issue of the Journal of the International Association of Sound and Audiovisual Archives, Burt Lyons wrote, quote, "What are the next steps for an archive as they look to the future? This is a question that some organizations have the privilege of beginning to consider now, organizations that began their digitization journey in the early years of this century. The future is long. If an archive follows best practices towards sustainable digital preservation of its collections, of course one might expect that the archive will commit to a continual future of obsolescence monitoring, fixity monitoring, technology refreshing, and of course continuous ingest of new digital content into the archive in consistent and manageable ways. But digital preservation is only one piece of the puzzle. Continuous access into the future is another topic altogether. I have noticed, and remember this is Bert talking, I have noticed over the past few years a serious gap in our discourse about the future of audiovisual collections. What are the protocols for keeping pace with the rapidly changing technologies that constitute the surface of the Internet? What are we doing to maintain relevance through access? My colleague Ed Summers at the Library of Congress recently spoke to the National Digital Forum in Wellington, New Zealand, and stressed that, quote, if you are not providing meaningful access in the present to digital content, then you are not preserving it, end quote, and end quote again.
Well, it's meta.
It is totally meta. We are archivist heavy.
And troublemaking.
There you go. File this set under CV361.F72.
Yeah.
I Got a Story to Tell You by the Cavettes, and before that, Your Secret's Safe with Me by the Nervous Patterns. Songs about bringing some things out of the dark and keeping some things in the dark.
We are talking about archiving the future here on Lost in the Stacks. Our guest is Bert Lyons, Senior Consultant at AV Preserve. So, Bert, you mentioned in the first segment, the technical skills that are building in archives. I'd like to talk a little bit about tool and system building in the future. It seems like archives are in a weird time right now, sort of maybe a digital archives adolescence, because digital preservation and access requires so much technical capacity, and archivists are working on building their own technical skills, but that takes time. At the same time, archives and institutions are struggling to hire and retain developers and IT professionals, because we can't compete with corporate salaries. And maybe in 20 years, everybody coming out of library school will have the tools or the skills that we need to be very technical. But in the next few years, where do you see tool building going, and who do you think is going to be doing this work, and will archivists sort of transform, some of them transform into developers, or is the consultant model the way forward? Yeah, we need help. Can you help us?
I 100% see archivists taking on more and more responsibility for developing their services, technological services for themselves within their organizations. I see that happening more and more. And look, if I just look at my personal experience over the past 6 years, I'm just going to look back to 2009. There's been tremendous change across the field in terms of just general knowledge of how technology works within an archive, where the lines are between what's efficient to do internally. If I need to build a script to rename 100,000 files, it's often more efficient for me to learn the skills to do that, and we see archivists doing this day in and day out, versus if I need to buy and set up a 100 tape robot so I can store 2 petabytes of content for my archive who's just digitized our 15,000 videos. There's different technological capacities there. In some cases, you might need or might want to bring in someone who has a very strong skill set in system architecture so they can help build and coordinate hardware installations, which are often different than software installations, right? And then even smaller pieces like script services, which I was talking about a little earlier, where we can work pretty manually or pretty independently within archives, archivists themselves, to make sure that they can handle most of the processes that they would like to handle on a day-to-day basis. I want to reorganize files automatically at this location on this server with some logic. Right? I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to transform data. I want to export data from this file, from this database environment. I want to transform it using something like XSLT, and then I want to import it to another environment. I think those are things that we see archivists doing more and more. Even also, you look at outcomes like BitCurator that have really brought new understanding to the field for working with digital information at a byte level and thinking about the digital information in its natural environment and trying to understand how to learn about many bytes using automated tools, using regular expression to go and look for social security numbers. These are things that archivists are already doing, and I think they'll keep doing that over time.
So as you look to the future of archives and digital audiovisual material, cloud services, and sharing storage, private web, we have to ensure that all communities have a voice in the archive and a say in how those materials are archived. So where do you think archivists need to focus their attention most urgently?
That's a good question. Can you explain a little bit in terms of focus attention, in terms of how to engage communities about maybe understanding about information management and the risks associated with information? Or is it about thinking about how to select certain storage options for maybe for families or individuals? Where are you pointing at it?
Yeah, I guess, you know, there's so many types of technological challenges that are emerging in terms of cloud services for record creation and sharing and storage. And, you know, is there a particular challenge that you think in terms of sources of archives that archivists should be attending to most urgently? Or I guess, is there an issue or a technology that you think is the biggest challenge right now as we look to the future of archives? And perhaps that issue is like a technology, or perhaps it is something more like, you know, what strategies can we implement to ensure that we have a broad and diverse archival record? So it might not be technology-based.
Right, right. No, that is a great question. And you certainly see, you know, I look at my personal life usually as an example. I think we probably all look at our own lives and try to kind of see what the trends are. But the amount of digital content that I and personally and in the business sense have stored in cloud shared environments, I think that you can see that across everybody. I think most people who are working on the internet, who have access to the internet and who are creating digital information on a daily basis, you know, are moving towards trusting environments like Google Drive, for a simple example, right? Where we have a lot of information up there. How are we individually managing that information is a big question. How are we organizationally managing that information? And then, ultimately, how is that information, the valuable parts of those, of that information making it into archive collections down the road? Is an even bigger question. And so I think that's certainly a huge question for archives. I think, of course, we tackled and for more than 10 years looked at web archiving. I think that conversation is ongoing and mature. I think we, for the past 5 or 6 years, have been looking at social media. I think that conversation is ongoing and mature. I think now, you know, they're pushing forward into, you know, darker parts of the web to try to understand, well, what parts of that information matter. But then even more so, I think we look now at day-to-day working documents, and archives need to start to think about the strategies that are going to need to be in place for acquiring individual materials for potential individual donors that were most of their information lives on Dropbox and Google Drive and other places like this, and there's multiple copies and various versions, and I think we're going to have a lot of questions with how we deal with versioning, how we deal with deduplication, how we deal with authentication, how we get that information when we need it, when we've selected it, how we get it into the archive. I think that's going to be a very big question. And the same question applies for organizational archives, for government and business archives, where we have these very large stores of content being sort of distributed off of individual computers and onto some shared cloud environment, which may make it easier in the end. You know, you definitely see trends in records management where it's smart to move to a SharePoint environment in a business where everybody works within a controlled environment and the records manager can manage those working files from a single place instead of scattered across 100 different employees' computers, right? So we need to look for strategies, and I think people are doing that. I think that will be a continuing thing that we do. I think that, secondly, I would point to mobile phones, mobile devices, and the amount of information that we're accruing there, which gets pushed up in the other cloud storage environment. I think that's certainly going to be a big question for archivists in the next 5 to 10 years.
That sounds like job security to me. That is a lot of challenges. But I like that hint of optimism that perhaps the cloud might make things easier for us.
But with all of the standards, we've got to, at the end of the day, it's about making policy decisions, making very clear decisions and being intentional about what we're trying to collect.
Yeah.
Regardless of where that material is actually stored.
Yeah. Well, we've been speaking today with Bert Lyons of AV Preserve about anticipating the road ahead for archives and the strategies that will empower us to get there. Thanks so much for joining us, Bert.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
File the set under ML3545.L63.
Amen.
Dolores by Brigido Mora, and before that, Sea Aunt Dinah by the Sea Island Singers. That one was recorded in St. Simon's Island, here in Georgia. Songs from the Alan Lomax Music Archive, preserved in the days before content was born digital.
Charlie, what's going on at the library next week?
You know, I'm always talking about our library, the Georgia Tech Library, but we have listeners all over. If you're listening to this now and know of something cool happening at your local library, we'd love to know. We want to spread the word. You can find us on Twitter and you can send us an email, all kinds of stuff. So, until then, we are the Georgia Tech Library, and we are at your service. Maybe.
Exactly.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Amit Doshi, Charlie Bennett, Wendy Hagemeyer, and Fred Rasko. And hey guys, you're gonna cut it a bit late, so you need to speed this up.
Oh, can do. Right.
Okay, hit it, Fred.
Anthony was our engineer today, and our show was brought to you by FYF.
What's that?
That's right. Face your flaws.
Hey.
You have some.
Legal counsel and beautiful baggage transfers were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Bert for being on the show, and thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening. And you can hear this show again or get in touch with us at warek.org/lostinthestacks.
Burn out, cousin, burn.
Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, at lostinthestacks.libsyn.com.
LIBSYN. Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we take another swing at social media with Facebook Is Not Your Archive.
And it's time for our last song today. And a reminder, if you're creating digital content, plot your future path for preservation and access. At, hey, this show is born digital. We've got a plan, right?
Well, for a start, we're archiving these shows in our institutional repository. Smart. I don't know where that is, but I know it's happening.
We'll throw that link up on Twitter and the website, but until then, preserve that digital content, folks, because the future comes a lot earlier than you think,
especially if you're moving too fast.
This is All Past by Songs of Haya, right here on Lost in the Stacks.
Thanks for listening to Lost in the Stacks from WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library. Find us online at wrek.org/lostinthestacks to see playlists for old shows, connect with our social media, or get in touch with us.